from my sister!
Welcome back to the Happy Feel Horror Podcast, where we review horror movies and horror franchises. I'm Mark.
And I'm Deadeye.
And today we're reviewing Five Nights at Freddy's, released in 2023, directed by Emma Tammy, who co-wrote the screenplay with Scott Cawthon and Seth Kugpak. Deadeye, can you give the people the plot summary?
Struggling to take care of his 10-year-old sister Abby on his own, the generally undependable Mike is low on options when he lands this new job to pay the bills, and brings her along to the gig. Mike quickly realizes, however, that the night shift at Freddy's won't be as kickback as he was thinking after he makes a disturbing discovery, that the pizza place's four horrifying animatronic mascots all apparently come alive, moving about on their own as they hunt down and attempt to kill anyone that is still at Freddy's after midnight.
So, everyone, Deadeye's back. Now, this is his first time back since we reviewed Detention together, and we're back again to review another horror movie based off a horror video game. So glad to have you back with us, Deadeye.
Appreciate it very much. Yeah, and there's quite a lot of horror games this one's kind of trying to cover, so should be in the
Yeah, it does. And over on his YouTube channel, which is also called Deadeye.
Yeah.
Yes, I joined him as he streamed a few of the Five Nights at Freddy games, and helped me understand the lore a little bit more, because honestly, besides knowing like what Five Nights at Freddy what is because of pop culture and at the time of it, like the game's release, I was definitely around and alive and knew what the hell was going on, but I never really played them. So when the movie came out and I decided I wanted to review it, I was like, I should play a game or two, or at least watch someone play the game, and you know, that's where Deadeye came into the rescue. And the games are fun and interesting. And it's kind of, I don't know, for me, it was weird, like, being with you doing the streams. Because the things that I was seeing from the movies, they weren't in that first game. And then you kept on saying, oh, like, this character comes in at this time, or this part of the lore comes in this game. I'm just like, oh, so the movie just kind of just merged lore from like four to five different games and just like threw it out there. So that was like interesting for me.
Yeah, it grabs a lot of lore, and then it also, you know, it changes it some to make it more convenient for a movie. There's a lot of stuff. The lore, you have the games themselves, which give you kind of a loose bit of lore here and there, and then you have what people have kind of broken apart through the games, through little bits and pieces here and there, signs or pieces of paper on a wall or whatever, to get a much more fleshed out story. The movie couldn't have possibly covered all that there is without making a lot of changes to it. So yeah, but it is nice to kind of get some background on it from the game as well, with set of games.
Had you played the games prior to the movie coming out, prior to you streaming it on your YouTube channel?
Only bits and pieces, I think, like back in middle school even. I believe there were, some of them were out. The maybe the first game had come out around that time. And so I played the first one a little bit. I never played the third. Maybe the first and second, little bits and pieces here and there. But until I showed it on my stream, yeah, I wasn't, I hadn't played all of them. Just watched, you know, I saw some stuff, you know, it's in the media for sure, like you mentioned earlier. But, and then there's been lore, like lore videos I watched some of when I was younger, because there's just, yeah, such an obsession with the games online.
Yeah, that's a lot of my research was coming from. I was just like watching lore videos and trying to get an understanding, because I was reading stuff about the games and then like being with you for the streams. And I'm just like, okay, what I'm seeing is not what the movie was telling me. So I need to know where this movie stuff comes from. And those lore videos definitely helped a lot.
Yeah, they flesh it out quite a bit. There's so much.
I know, and I feel like there's so much that they left out that they can definitely have like at least one more movie, which I think might be in the cards. So, you know, but for me going into this movie, I don't know, I was kind of excited even though I hadn't played the games, because I enjoyed the concept Like, I was never a Five Nights at Freddy's fan, but I enjoy the concept of, like, this, what are they referred to as? The
animatronics, yeah.
Not the animatronics, but, like, the place, like the...
Oh,
like
yeah, the, Family Diners, or, well, it's really, like, Chuck E. Cheese-esque.
Yeah.
Turned into horror, for sure.
Yeah, because I hate it. I don't like Chuck E. Cheese, and I didn't like Haunted Trails or any of those, like, family animatronic places. Like, my parents... My mom took me to, like, Chuck E. Cheese on several birthdays, and you can find photos of me looking very upset and just, like, not amused. Like, why are we here with this giant-ass rat person eating his bad pizza? So, like, I always had, like a weird feeling about those kind of places. So, like, the concept of the movie and the video games always, like, appealed to me. Mm. And then I had watched the Nicolas Cage movie, Willy's Wonderland, and I was like, okay, this is basically a Five Nights at Freddy's movie. So sure. Now we're getting an actual, like, movie based off the IP, like, legitimate. So it should be great. So I went to this movie, like, really looking forward to it. And then, you know, having Josh Hutcherson in it just made me want to watch it even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they did a good job with a lot of the movie. I'm always a little hesitant. You know, I feel like the one with Nick Cage in it was kind of felt low budget. It felt kind of cheap. Even though Nick Cage is in it, he's in a lot of movies that are kind of like that, where he's the star actor and everything else is just there to be around him, or to be like a gimmick for him to use. But yeah, this one, I think the animatronics, the designs for the animatronics were really pretty cool. They definitely spent some money on the diner and everything to try to make it closer to the IP and you know, give fans of that more to work with. So there's a few things, though, from the games or just from kind of paying attention, rewatching through the movie that I felt like I didn't notice on a first watch. But I think maybe before getting into some of that stuff, do we kind of talk about some of the kills, maybe to start with? Because I feel like...
Yeah, let's talk about some of the kills. I feel like... Mm-hmm. Sorry, we can talk about the kills and the scenes together, mm-hmm. some of the standout scenes, because I feel like... That opening scene / kill kind of gave me a false hope and a false excitement for the movie.
I can see that.
It opens with that security guard being killed, and it's like it's an intense, adrenaline's pumping. You're kind of scared. You're kind of on high, and then that's it. And then we don't get that for like a long while.
Right. Yeah. There's a pretty big delay there. I mean, a lot of horror movies, you don't really get into the horror too much, you know, until you get a bit into the movie. But that beginning was, and especially the way, like the mask with all the blades on it and everything like that, like in a maybe a more R-rated type of movie, that could be a pretty brutal scene to show. And so, like that was such a cool kind of start. But I don't really feel like until well into the movie later on that we get anything even close to the brutality of what that like makes you like primes you for. Like, okay, this is maybe kind of going
to
be pretty cool.
Yeah, but even with that, yeah. I like to compare it to like that first Halloween from the 70s. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. It starts with like 5-year-old Michael Myers, or however old he was, killing his sister, and then you know it goes from that and. Yes, the brutality and the killing is, like, slowed down, and we don't really get that for probably 40 minutes afterwards. But in between that time, they're still building up the intensity and the scare. You have a character there who is running around town saying, he's on the loose. No one's safe. He's going to kill you all. And you have another character who is being stalked. So you still have that, like, fear there, and I feel like that's what the movie was missing.
Yeah.
That's a good
point. Yeah, something
that
to keep
fear that lingered. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like, I agree. Yeah, that's interesting. Because I remember, I think right after that early scenes, we get some shots that are, you know, they're good for setting up tension, but it doesn't feel like the scenes have anything really that scary. Like, I feel like early on, after that, you have Josh Hutcherson, you have, I guess, Mike is the character's name. You have him as a security guard. You know, he beats up the guy that he thinks is going to abduct a kid, things like that. But you don't really have any reason to care that much at this point. You don't really know this character. From there, talking to the guy that kind of is a semi stand-in for Phone Guy, or you could say more of a major villain later on. But at this time, it's just like just some guy. So it does feel like there's this big drop off. If you've already seen the movie, looking back on it, maybe you have a little bit more intensity because you know some of the stakes here. Like, why is he acting so ridiculous? But even like, I think especially what stood out to me in a, maybe a negative way on first watch, and maybe, I mean, really just kept on. Every time I watched it, I was kind of like, okay, he chases down this guy and beats him up and everything like that. It just feels, it reminded me so much of like Paul Blart Mall Cop or something. It just seems goofy. Like, I don't know why he's chasing this guy. I don't know why he's tackling him. It just sounds like
it just felt off.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't quite hit. So yeah, the early part of the movie, yeah, because until you start getting into 5 minutes, and that's another thing that the movie has to contend with, is like, if we're not in the if we're not in the set where everything, they've spent all the money, they spent all the time, and they've spent all the care getting these animatronics together and everything, that's great. But if we're out and about, like, I don't care about the mall. I don't care about him and his sister. I don't know why to care yet. So so that was, and I would say
about the dreams he was having. And it's like,
oh sure. Mm-hmm.
I feel like every 20 minutes or so, the tone of the movie shift for me. Mm-hmm. Like, the tone kept switching. I'm like, okay, it's this hard knock life family drama.
Sure.
And then you have the stuff with the woods that gives him PTSD. Mm-hmm. And then you have the intensity at Five Nights at Freddy's. Mm-hmm. And then you have the awkward, like, love story with the girl. And it's just like, the movie has so many different tones. You could like go in one direction, and it really wasn't doing it for me.
Right. Yeah. It's funny because, yeah, I feel like that is really the downside. Because overall, I liked the movie quite a bit. I think as like a spinoff to a game type of thing, it felt like they spent some extra money, some extra time, and the acting was solid. But those things were a downside. The pacing or the tone of it early on, especially, was pretty rough. I do feel like on second watch, there were a couple things that I noticed that I thought were pretty interesting. During the parts where things are just kind of not that compelling, I'm trying to find something to be interested in. With the guy that's the career counselor, I think, what's his name in there? I wrote it down here. So there's the guy that's the career counselor, and his name is something completely unimportant. It's totally not involved in the games or anything like that, but he ends up being the final kind of evil, which should be William Afton. In the games, that's William Afton. He made the animatronics along with another character that's not in the movie at all. Henry Emily, I think.
He has two names. When he's pretending to be the career counselor, he's Steve Raglan, but he's also actually William Afton.
Ah, okay, so they do bring that around. I thought they must. When I rewatched it again, I noticed, yeah, his name is Steve Raglan on the tag, and I'm like, okay, it's kind of a random name. In the lore, Mike, our character, who is definitely Mike Schmidt, because he even says, he's like, Mike Schmidt, and then he stops himself. But that's the character from the first Five Nights at Freddy's game, and it's sort of a callback to that. Mike Schmidt. Schmidt is supposed to be like an alias or like a fake name as well, like Raglan is, or Steve Raglan or whatever. It's supposed to be a fake name. His real name is Michael Afton, and he's supposed to be the son of that character in the games. But clearly in the movie, that's being kind of scrapped. This is one of the big changes in my mind where Michael.
Oh,
Mike,
I missed that. Yeah, in the games. That's,
yeah, it's you don't really notice it in the games without like some lore diving. But Michael, well, in the games, he's supposed to be trying to like destroy the Five Nights at Freddy's stuff because a lot of bad stuff happens there. There's the murders and all that stuff is involved. I won't get overly into the game lore, but that's one aspect of it where we're playing as a character that knows that these animatronics are here. We've got the guy on the phone. I don't think that's supposed to be William Afton, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But yeah, William is in this one, he reads the name Mike Schmidt, and then he stops himself, and then his tone shifts. And I don't really notice it too heavy when I watch the movie first, but on rewatch, I'm like, okay, he says Mike Schmidt, and then he stops himself, kind of clears his throat, and is like, actually, I do have a job for you. When I first saw that, I was like, this is kind of weird, because if this is supposed to be, like, how would you know who Mike Schmidt is? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? Because Mike Schmidt in this universe, in this movie, he's not his son. That wouldn't make any sense. He'd recognize him immediately, right? So who is this guy? Why is he stopping and he's reconsidering, okay, maybe I do have a job for you? And then it's the reason, I think, is because he killed his younger brother. So he might have talked to Garrett Schmidt, right? He might have heard his last name before killing him at some point, and now he's like, oh, two for one, right? I gotta get this guy. He's like, and the way he acts after that throughout the, like, throughout trying to sell Michael Schmidt or Mike Schmidt on that he should work at the at Five Nights at Freddy's at the restaurant is like, yeah, well, you know, you don't have to do it, but it's a job and you could make it happen, whatever. And the whole time he's clearly he's kind of going in this salesman kind of pitch where earlier in the conversation, he's like, you kind of suck. I don't know where in the world you would work. You don't accept anybody. You're kind of just not fit for anything. All of a sudden, he's like kind of trying to really sell. And that shift happens when he sees his name. And I thought that was super interesting because there's no real reason to notice. But once you notice, it's weird the way that he acts after that point. Weird, but good. It makes sense. Like a snake or something, right? So that's a little bit of something that I doubt many people would have noticed. I didn't notice it the first couple times. And then once I thought about it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is cool. Outside of that, there's only one other... Okay, there's another thing, too. I thought that was interesting. Another thing that I thought was kind of interesting, when we talk about, like, characters, noticing something on second watch, because now you know this character is going to do this or that thing. Overall, I really don't like the babysitter character. I don't really feel like it fits. It's just super weird on first viewing and on future viewings, because the babysitter... Seemingly, this is like Max, I think is her name, is Mike's friend. There's almost this inclination of like maybe love interest there because she's looking at rings on the TV and kind of says something to Mike like she says something like, I wish someone would buy me a ring. What do you think, Mike? And he doesn't respond to that. But there's sort of like a feeling like these guys should know each other pretty well. And she's babysitting him for him for free. And then later on, she, I think, betrays him to the mother or whatever who's planning on getting him killed or at least like fired from a job. That whole thing felt super weird. And her character just felt really out of place. Like, why don't I know who this character is? Why do I never really get introduced very well to this character? But then after a time, I came around to it after rewatching it most recently, because I think they do try to set her up to be like a traitor, almost. I didn't notice it on the first couple of watches, and I still don't really like her character overall because I think it's kind of bland. It wasn't really explored very well. But when she's looking at those rings, she's looking at the rings. We have a picture, like a shot of her sitting there looking at the rings. Then we have a shot of the rings, and they're like super expensive, whatever. And it's saying on the TV, like, you know, they're so perfect. You need one of these rings. It'll really help in whatever way. And then we have a shot back to her. And so I'm looking at her. I'm looking at the rings. I'm like, okay, I don't really care about this character. Then I'm like, why am I being shown rings right now? What is the point of this? Is it just to like have her flirt with Mike? And then we get a shot back to her. She's already wearing like several rings, like four or five rings on her fingers. And I'm like, okay, she's obsessing over materialistic stuff. And she's like, you can just see her like eyes like gunning down to the TV as she wants these rings. She already has a bunch of rings. It sort of sets her up as like maybe a greedy type of character, which allows a bit more later on for when she betrays Mike, for that to make sense. Still don't love the character because like there's not really any payoff to that. I didn't know her before and I still don't really know her. But at least it was something to try to make something out of her character and not just, you know, like it uses up some of the time. It's
I felt like, shot. Now that yeah. you mention it, I felt like mm-hmm. like maybe Mike had given her those other rings as payment. But I feel like, yeah, that whole character and all those scenes with her made no sense. It was just like, yeah. why is she here? Why is this side plot here? And mm-hmm. everything with the aunt was also just like,
yeah.
Like, is this really necessary? Like, it just felt... Mm-hmm.
She's, like, cartoonishly evil. I think, yeah, like, that kind of sucked. Yeah.
It felt like mm-hmm. they thought they really needed to flesh out a story outside of Fassbender. But it's mm-hmm. like, no, we're here to watch him be at Freddy Fassbender, Fazbear mm-hmm. Pizzeria. Like, this is what we want to see. This is what Five Nights at Freddy's is. I mean, other yeah. than that one game where they were, like, stalking the kid in the bedroom, they all mostly took place at Fazbear. So, like, we didn't need some other story. And then, since we're still talking about scenes, all the scenes in the woods and the dream sequences, like, I did not care. And I was trying to figure out how the hell... Like, I was kept trying to understand why this was important, how this connect to to the to animatronics. Mm-hmm. And then when you learn that the place where his brother was kidnapped isn't the same city or state where Fazbear is located, it still wasn't making any sense for me. It never really connected. I know that at the end, and in the end, we really learned that Aston is the one who kidnaps Mike's younger brother. But it's like, was he just like some roaming child serial killer? And then he just so happens to establish Fazbear because he thought, oh, well, this is more convenient. If I just like kill kids who come here, then roam around the country looking for random kids to kidnap and murder. Like, they didn't connect it completely for me. It just all just felt like they took a different script and was like, okay, we're going to just use this for Five Nights at Freddy's and just like throw the whole like Fazbear plot in there at some point. That's what it started to feel like at some point for me. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah. So I didn't really think about that, maybe because I didn't really think about the locations of everything as much, but I know in the games there were multiple FNAF locations. I don't know if the movie ever indicated that there even would be, or if it was all just one. I don't know if they really say or not. So in my mind, I'm already kind of assuming there's somewhere nearby that he took Garrett to, but it might have been that he's supposed to have driven all the way out there, because they do act like it's pretty far away. I don't remember exactly where it's all taking place at, but I think it's like Omaha or something like that. Nebraska, mm-hmm. maybe? I'm not sure. Somewhere out there where this happened. It's meant to be further away, which is interesting. I also don't, like, with the daughter, thinking back, and this could just be me misremembering, but I don't, no, maybe I'd have to watch it again. I don't remember, there wasn't a daughter, there was just him and his brother initially, and then then Garrett gets taken away, and then there's the daughter. Are his parents dead? Is that the idea?
I think his parents are dead. Because it doesn't explain, either they're dead or it's not explained. But obviously his parents, through their grief of losing their younger son, they had a daughter. But it's not explained like how long after Abby was born or what happened to their parents afterwards, like how long has it just been Mike and Abby? Like, none of that is explained.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Maybe there's some offline or something there where it says that they're dead or that they're in grief, or I don't know. I know, like, he ended up taking care of his younger sister, and then in him taking care of her, there's a lot of these things about her seeing things that aren't there. I was trying to kind of figure out from her drawings or anything if there's any indication that she was seeing the animatronics or like those kids before she went to FNAF, or if she only really starts seeing them then, because there's some scenes early on before she even goes to the pizzeria where she's seeing things, and she even says to her brother, she's like, "You're sitting on my friend," and he's like kind of exasperated and gets up. So she clearly is seeing things, but maybe she just has an overactive imagination, and that's what lets her see the animatronics.
Because with his dreams, sometimes it felt like his dreams were like visions or like premonitions. Mm-hmm. And then with her, like, also seeing things, I was getting like a weird supernatural element there. Mm. And that's why I said earlier that, like, the tone of the movie and like what the movie was telling me was kind of like different. Like, I kept, like, it all felt different. It's like, is this about some child killer at a pizzeria? Is this about someone kidnapping kids out the woods? Is it some hard knock life drama? Like, do they have supernatural powers? Like, are the ghost kids talking to them? And if that's the case, it's like, I don't know. I just wasn't understanding. It was starting to get confusing for me. And the more we like dive into that, the more confusing it gets.
Yeah, there could have been. Maybe there were just too many pieces. I think especially with the aunt or whatever, that was a lot. Because I feel like when it comes to the dreams, we're kind of set up for him to be trying to explore dreams. and trying to get back to this place where this stuff happens. I feel okay about a lot of that, that he's been having this dream over and over again. Then when he goes there, that the animatronics or like the souls of the kids or whatever, that that stuff is involved in him seeing more, maybe. Especially
see, I would have been
killed. Yeah.
I would have been more okay with it if it turned out that one of the animatronics was his brother.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah,
and
exactly.
And that would have made sense to why, why Abby was connected to them, because unbeknownst to her, her big brother that she never met was reaching out to her.
Yeah.
And kind of connecting. Like, that would have all made it so much better. Like, oh, actually, one of these animatronics is our brother. And that's why they bonded with Abby, because he's being protective of his little sister. Like, it, I don't know. It's like the dots could have been, but it could have been connected better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like the story's right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there were some points when I first watched the movie. I feel like things like that, a little bit up and down, not the worst. The selling point for the movie would definitely be the animatronics and like the sets and everything. That was pretty well designed. Some of the ideas in it are cool, but yeah, there's some parts that are kind of all over the place. I could have done without, especially the ant, because I think the dream sequences are kind of necessary. Without those, you have to find a whole something else. Like, I think that helps. You tie the kids in as being like the animatronics, and then we're kind of humanizing them in this maybe good way, make you think of them as being like kids, because that's really what they're supposed to be. That feels okay. Could have been tied in better, but I feel like that's kind of necessary. The ant feels a lot less necessary, because I don't know if I need the ant that much. Maybe she's fine to get the criminals in there, though, because I think the death scenes there are super important. Without that, how many death scenes can you even have? You need to have some throwaway characters to have the animatronics, like, to show the real danger these things pose. That feels okay, because some of the criminal deaths, when they break in, that is maybe one of the highlights. It's silly, but I think there's a part where one of them gets, like, bitten in half or something. That was pretty cool. That brings up some of those scenes, like helps make that worthwhile.
Yeah, that definitely does add to it. Cause you know, when you watch horror movies, like you want the death scenes, you want, even if they're not particularly gory, like you watch horror movies for those kills. That's like a part of the joy of horror movies. And again, it felt like it dragged out so long after that initial opening kill. So when we get to the criminals, it all makes sense. But I don't think we needed the ant to get the criminals there. They could have just been, honestly, since they were modernized. Well, actually, I think this movie is set in the early 2000s. If I'm thinking of the timeline correctly, because it says that his brother was kidnapped in 1980, and he was a kid then, and now he's in his late 20s, early 30s. So this
makes sense.
This movie is set in early 2000s. So I was gonna say it could have been that instead of criminals, they could have been just like some YouTubers exploring, but that would have been too early for that. Mm. But
oh yeah.
Well, they could have just been criminals, or just people who are just breaking in to like crash at Fazbear, or to just like do stupid stuff. Like, they could have got those people there, those characters there, without needing the aunt to send them there.
True. Yeah, I did kind of like the there's that lawyer guy that she's always kind of hauling around with her, who's just so doesn't want to be there all the time. I kind of like that character. It's a bit of a throwaway, but it was funny.
He was funny. That whole, I was like, oh, he does not want to be there. He just he just wants to get paid so he can never see this woman ever again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did a good job, I think, acting in those scenes where he's just so, like, blank face. Like, please, let me leave.
Just done. But even the aunt also brings up more questions about, like, okay, if you're going to have it tell us that Mike's taking care of his sister, and he's so overprotective because he lost his brother. And you have this aunt who wants the sister because she wants that paycheck from the government that you get when you're taking care of kids.
Sure.
But you don't tell us why they're in this situation. Like, I want to know, that now that you introduced all this, I now want to know what happened to Mike and Abby's parents that Mike is taking care of his sister. It's like,
right. Yeah, it brings like, in.
I get it. They lost a son. That comes with emotional and mental breakdowns, but they had it together enough to conceive Abby. So like, I need a timeline. So did having Abby eventually break them? Did something else happen to break them? Like, why are we at the point where Mike has to take this dangerous job to support his sister? And you have, and the aunt, how do we, is this his mom's sister, his dad's sister? Like, what, what's going on here? It just, having that character there opens the movie up to more questions, and we don't get answers to them.
Yeah, it's sort of weird. Like, it makes the movie feel a bit rushed, even though I don't feel like most of it was super rushed. It's just like they had enough time, I feel like, to make it a bit more human, or to humanize the characters a bit, because they without knowing the backstories, without knowing the reasons, it's just sort of like, it's harder to care about the characters. You're just sort of waiting for the animatronics to come back on screen a little bit, which is okay. I mean, you might be anyway, but just a little bit more there would have been better. And so, after having played the games and looked at the lore and whatever, there was also Vanessa. Vanessa shows up, and that character. So from the games, there's this whole slew of characters. I think they almost threw in Vanessa as being a character to get people who are interested in the games to wonder what's going to happen. Like, I bet they had like a cast list or something beforehand where everyone's like, "Who's Vanessa? Why is Vanessa in this game? How does that play in?" Because in the games, Vanessa is a security guard that I think gets somehow possessed by William Afton's soul or something. The games get really convoluted after you go through the first like five games or so. We start to get to Security Breach and Ultimate Custom Night or whatever. There's like these variety of games after where there's a lot of weird stuff with souls and things like that. But so Vanessa's character comes in way later and has her own strange story. In this movie, Vanessa plays as William's daughter. William's daughter's name is Elizabeth. So William had three kids. There was Michael Afton, who is the main sort of security guy later on. There was, I think, William Jr., who is a kid that ends up getting killed. And then there's Elizabeth, who also gets killed by an animatronic, which is called Baby. And Baby actually shows up, weirdly. There's a lot of like little bits and pieces of lore or important parts of lore that don't really fit together that get pulled into the movie and then change dramatically. So Elizabeth is the machine in, I think it's in the storage wherever, where Vanessa, the security guard, and Mike, or I guess Vanessa, the cop in this case, and Mike, the security guard, go back into this, into the storage room within the movie, and there's this doll sitting there with its chest open and these spring locks on it, and Vanessa takes a broom and stabs it into the center, and the spring locks they jerk in and like crush the end of the broom. That thing on the ground, that broken apart machine, is Baby, and Baby is the machine that's originally supposed to have eaten Elizabeth, who Vanessa basically is Elizabeth in this game. It's kind of a mess there with lore. So watching a lot of that happen, I was like, okay, what's going on? How does this fit in? Where are they trying to pull this stuff in from the games? It is interesting though. I'm glad that they kept a lot of things from the games, but it doesn't really fit super well, to be honest. But Baby's a cool design. It just, but they used like a really broken apart version of Baby in the movies. Baby was in Sister Location, which I think we were on stream a little bit playing or taking a look at Sister Location, which it's the Baby's the one that has like this, well, a baby like voice and talks to you throughout Sister Location, where the one where you're crawling through the vents and you have to hide inside of under a cabinet or something like that, close a door, and then she chats to you like telling you bits of lore or whatever. That character is a super cool character. It's supposed to be Elizabeth's soul in that character, and then we're just left with this empty hunk in the movie. Feels a little bit like a letdown. Like, don't even have the character in, and then to have Vanessa switch into being Michael or William Afton's daughter. Yeah, it's a bit of a mess. I kind of like that she's there, but I wish they would have named her Elizabeth. It would have just made more sense. Why make the change?
I think they made the change to throw off fans of the game. Because if you merely walk in and say, oh, I'm Elizabeth, then
all the fans
of the game will be like, oh, okay, now we know who she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, that's fair. And that's true.
I think a lot of people
were thrown off. Mm-hmm.
But were there any other scenes that like stood out for you or caught your attention, or do you want to move on?
Well, so I would talk a little bit about the ending, if that's fine, or we're working to that.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, because I really feel like I really hated everything to do with the painting stuff. It's just not for me, you know. It's maybe that's just personal taste, but
the drawing stuff. I remember asking you when we were doing the streaming. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Does this come into play in the video, like in the games?" Because it felt off. It just felt like this did not make any sense to me.
Yeah, I can see maybe what they were going for because I think the only reason they had it as a part of everything going on was there might be two reasons. One reason would be to give us a lot more to do in the side plot where we talk about Abby and her personality and her quirkiness, I guess. And that reason's kind of frustrating because a lot of the side plot stuff we could have done without, frankly. And then the other reason maybe would be to keep it kind of more PG, I guess, because with the paintings doing that, rather than having to have everything be settled with blood, it's maybe better. But we still end up not only killing Vanessa with a knife, but then also I'm pretty sure William is supposed to be at the end there, like ripped apart by his own animatronics. So he's killed by the spring traps or spring locks in his suit. Like, I feel like we just didn't need that drawing stuff, and it felt really corny. It's sort of a kids' show, whatever movie, but like the games are also semi for kids, and they don't do that to you in the games. The games can talk about awful death and whatever, and it's like it's in the setting of animatronics and it's this freaky world. That's fine. Why not have a similar thing in the movie because it feels like almost like disrespectful to the audience of like, okay, it's PG-13. That's good enough to where we're showing people getting killed. What is this painting? What is this drawing thing? It's just, yeah, really out of place in my opinion. I liked William Afton being the first guy, the counselor. It was a cool callback, frankly, the first time that I watched it. Maybe I'm just like oblivious. I just don't pay attention. But the first time that I watched it, when he pulls off the mask, I didn't even realize who it was. I was like, oh, William Afton. He has a face. He can talk. That kind of sucks. But then on rewatch, I'm like, okay, he's this earlier character. That's fine. But I feel like in almost any franchise, when you have a kind of spooky villain with a disturbing mask, disturbing type of face, less is almost always more. When you take off the mask and have him have a whole like monologue about how whatever, it feels really cartoony. It's not as scary, it's not as intimidating. Him with the mask on is scary enough. Just let him not talk at all and don't make him another character. Just make him almost silent, because in the games that's how it was. He was this like disturbing, broken apart machine thing that only said like a few sets of dialogue, and that was it. And that just works way better in my opinion.
Yeah, the ending confused me with the drawings and like the animatronics turning on him. Like I expected that to happen. Like once it's revealed who he is, I was okay. Yes, the animatronics are going to turn on him at some point. But I also felt like the ending would have been so much more perfect if we found out that one of the animatronics was Mike and Abby's brother. It would have just been a full circle moment, and now they're like, oh, he got them. It would have been even better if he was Freddy. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it was such a, like, you threw all of this, like, family plot in there, and they needed to connect it strongly. Like, if you're going to have this family plot in there, and if there's potentially that like, this is going to be the recurring cast that comes back for any future movies, then like you connect it all the way. You give them that connection, like, oh, Freddy is our brother's spirit. And now we reminded him who he is. And now he's killing William to protect us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just keep getting drawn to like the brother should have been one of the animatronics. He should have been
Freddy. I agree. And I think that also would have been, it would have been easier to pull off while making it feel earned. It would have been so much easier, because I feel like if you make him, if you make Garrett, like the younger brother, just make him just anybody who was just killed, you have to do so much more work to make that feel earned and powerful or like impactful. Because like the whole point of searching for the brother is to get maybe some type of revenge and to get some type of like understanding of what happened. And so if you make the brother be an animatronic, then you get that pretty easy. You just, yeah, you make him kill William. He's like the defender. Maybe you have the place burned down at the end. And so the brother ends up dying, but at least you have, you get the revenge and you get the closure of knowing exactly what happened to that kid. But instead,
yeah, and then you have the three siblings there together and it's like, okay, we, the family protected each other, but it also would give, it would bring sense to that scene you mentioned earlier of when Mike mentions his name to William and William had like a little face.
Yeah.
Like it would have drawn all together if it was like, oh, he made that face because his brother's inside of Freddy.
Yeah, I feel like if you want to make it impactful in the same way without having the younger brother be a part of it anymore, you kind of have to, you have to explore William a little bit more and have it be like, have there be some scene or something where Mike is asking him about his younger brother and he says, I don't even remember. Like something to say like, this guy killed so many kids, whatever, this guy did so much awful stuff that he doesn't even care or remember, that it doesn't faze him anymore, this idea. Like there has to be, but if you're not going to do either, you're going to make him still menacing and he's going to remember fully that he killed him, but he's not going to brag or act at all like awful about it. Like it just feels like, yeah, this guy's not as, you're not making out to be the monster that he is. If this is just one of many, and that wasn't really explored at all. That feels like a waste, because like this character, that's interesting. A character that's like a serial killer that, you know, goes after kids, whatever, terrible character, whatever, horrifying. But that type of character, now you have this vendetta with the brother that you have to use that somehow. And it just feels like sort of unused. We just kind of kill him because we have to.
Unfortunately, people who listen to this podcast know that I just hate prequels that go and explain too much about mysterious characters. And I hate when someone remakes a movie, like the 2007 Halloween remake. I hate the fact that they went and showed us too much of little Michael Myers and gave him this like trailer park crash type of family background to explain his evilness. Like I hate when movies and sequels and remakes do that. But I feel like this movie makes me want a prequel to understand, like, was William a serial killer who launched Freddy Fazbear to make his killing easier? Or was he already the Freddy Fazbear owner who just snapped and decided he wanted to start killing kids and he franchised around the country to make that more convenient for him? Like, he used Freddy Fazbear as a cover-up. And it's just like, I need to understand how the person who kidnapped Mike's brother out the woods is the same person who launched Freddy Fazbear and is killing kids. Like, I need to know more about that character.
That could be really
like,
good.
It's so much fun.
I feel like they could do a lot with that. Like they could definitely, there's that scene we have semi-early in the movie where Mike turns on the TV or puts in the tape and it shows the advertisement for Five Nights at Freddy's. You have that character. You could have that character and the William Afton character, younger William Afton, going through setting up FNAF and whatever turmoil he has, whatever pushes him to do what he does. And so, like, have an exploration of that, and then even, like, within that, have a scene or have a part where that's being shot, and, like, that's within the shot, something like that. It feels like there's a lot of really cool things you could do with an earlier...
Or it could be, like, we find out that William isn't actually the original, like, owner of Freddy Fazbear. It's like, he worked there. He probably stumbled upon, you know... No, we always hear stories about some serial killers who end up having a victim that they groom to now help them do the job. And, you know, that could also have been William's story. And it just could have, they even could have had it where, you know, Mike's brother is probably still alive somewhere. And Like, Mike's brother could have been the bad guy at the end instead of having it be actual William, to be like, okay, he kidnapped his brother and he groomed his brother and now we're here and you find out that it's, like, I don't know. I just feel like there's so much potential for this movie and they just...
Yeah. It does miss a lot of areas. I think it's just the animatronics. Like that stuff is good, but the story kind of falls flat a good amount. It's okay. Yeah, a lot of that's just okay. They could definitely do more with it, and hopefully they do, I suppose. Because I like the animatronics enough that I'd love to see another attempt or an expansion of it, for sure. Yeah.
Any thoughts on any more thoughts on Mike and Abby and the whole crew of humans that we got?
Outside of that, no. I feel like I talked about the babysitter a decent amount. I feel like I've got a good handle. Well, MatPat, maybe that's the only other one worth mentioning. MatPat, who did all the game theories, which were a pretty big part, maybe not of popularizing. I think Five Nights at Freddy's would have done well on its own anyway, but of unifying all the lore people, whether you kind of hated MatPat, because he had some pretty loosely put together theories on it, and sometimes they were pretty far off, and there was always so much more to find, so like a lot of them have been disproven at this point, but I think he's pretty central to the game side of it and the internet obsession with it that came about. And so having him actually show up in the movie and, you know, deliver some lines, that was pretty cool to see. It was pretty short lived, you know, but yeah, that was cool within the diner and everything.
What about the animatronics themselves?
Oh, yeah. Well, but the animatronics... I feel like the animatronics didn't have a ton. You know what? Actually, the negative thing for the animatronics, I didn't really love. I guess like having them put up the chairs and tables and everything felt kind of out of place. Yeah, a lot of that stuff was a bit strange. I did like. I think there was a part where the animatronic bear, it goes back and I think gets the girl or something. There's a part within, they go into a taxi and the bear is like massive in the taxi. It felt a little bit unreal. Some of that stuff was weird, but it was also kind of cool to see them in that setting. I wouldn't have ever expected them to do that, and I don't really think it was a good idea to have Freddy Fazbear as a massive suit creature go across the entire town and then come back across the entire town, whatever, to the facility. But it was kind of cool to see. Outside of that, I don't really feel like the animatronics had a ton of individual personality. Some of the kills with them were cool, I suppose. Like having the, like, Chica's cupcake play such a role where it's not just a cupcake on a platter, it's like actively attacking characters is pretty neat. But it did also kind of feel like a dog or an animal, and I don't really know why the cupcake would be any less centered.
I did, but I have to say, like, cupcake's kill scenes were like,
yeah,
they're pretty cool. I was laughing at them, but were like enjoyment, because I was like, what the hell.
yeah. So that's what I would say, yeah, for the animatronics. Not a lot of character development or, like, you know, individual personality going on, but I thought the kills were pretty cool, and there were some pretty funny scenes with those.
And before we wrap up, I have, like, something that I never really do, but being that you've played most of the games, if there are any sequels, like, what from the games would you want to be like part of like a potential sequel?
Well, I think one thing in terms of animatronics that look especially unique, this is largely based off the movie is largely based off the first game for animatronic designs. And so I think probably Sister Location is the one to go for a sequel. Like, I feel like the first game, these types of animatronics, this type of look for the movie, fair enough. That's like the iconic look. The second game is just the same with toy animatronics. I don't think that they were unique enough to really stand out. They're basically all the same type. You could go, you know, game by game and keep it that way, except for the third game where there's only one animatronic. That doesn't really work. But the first game, the second game, maybe the fourth game. But I feel like all of these are just, they're not quite unique enough. When you get to Sister Location, you've got Baby as like the way that Baby and Ballora and all the different animatronics in Sister Location look, I think stands out way better. That could be a cool thing to do. For lore and everything like that, now that you already have Vanessa in the game, Vanessa's dead now, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I don't think she makes it out alive. She gets stabbed at least. But maybe she lives. I forget exactly. But well, or maybe they don't even really show. I don't know if they really indicate for sure whether or not she lives. But to go from there, yeah, you could keep Mike in. Now he knows his brother's death. You'd have to have almost another story. I think from here, if you want to keep it going, you need to shift over to a whole different set of people. You would go back in the past if you want, explore William Afton, whatever. You could go into the future and explore some of the baby or whatever animatronics there and have a whole another villain. That'd probably be okay. There's also Security Breach, which is maybe worth considering, like a really big facility. That game did pretty well, pretty popular. So I guess I'd say I lean towards Sister Location. I think that game has the best animatronic look to it, but you could try to throw in stuff from some of the other games as well.
Well, Vanessa didn't die. She was in a coma at the end. So they could bring her back, but I agree with you. Like, there's nothing more you can tell with these set of characters. Like, you would either have to go on the past or have a completely different story. Like, it doesn't.
Maybe, well, okay, the only other one left may be Abby, right? Because her character isn't looking for her brother. She doesn't care about that. She's looking for friends, and she kind of finds friends, but I'm pretty sure her friends are, like, undead kid ghosts or whatever. I guess at the end, she was starting to associate with people better, so maybe Abby is, like, a 20-something who no longer thinks about it, comes back to the story. There were a bunch of books. I'm not going to get into that. I mean, there's so many. There's, like, I think 29 books. I haven't read them, but I have
29 books? I didn't know there were books at all.
There's a crazy amount of books. It's wild. So there's a bunch of books, and the books all tell different semi, like, small stories. One of the central characters, an important character from the books, I believe is called Charlie. And Charlie, without getting overly into it, Charlie has a lot, like, in common or in relation to the baby character. Charlie, for whatever reason, keeps ending out close to the animatronics. You could probably have a character based off Charlie, have it be Abby, and Abby keeps kind of running into these scenarios related, or she keeps being drawn to, like, an old location, an old Five Nights at Freddy's location or something like that. It would be kind of similar to the way the book played out in that way, because it feels like, and maybe they were even trying to set up that direction if the movie does well enough or something. And I think the movie did really well. I think Abby's character is interesting enough that you could have her kind of forget all about it. She's young enough for that. Have her go into her 20s, and she's like, yeah, I remember as a kid there was some weird stuff with animatronics, whatever, and then have to kind of remember or re-explore some of that as an adult. Maybe with also, you could have other kids involved, whatever, to keep it, you know, keep it interesting, or to have other characters, or, you know, something along those lines. But I think her character you maybe could pull in.
I mean, the movie was set in, like, 2000 and the early 2000s, so you could even, a sequel could be, like, we flash forward to, like, the beginning of, like, the big YouTube craze, and now you have kids who want to explore the abandoned Freddy Fazbear, and that could be the movie.
Yeah. Well, there's also, without going too far into it, but there's also, so Security Breach, which is the newest game, I believe is set in, like, 2035, something like that. And so you could flash even forward if you wanted. And in that game, you've got this massive facility that's based off of this old Five Nights at Freddy's stuff. I don't know how it would play in with the movie, because it feels like Five Nights at Freddy's is kind of dead in the movie, but, you know, maybe we don't know everything. Because, like, let's say let's say Abby goes to this facility that's, like, a much bigger facility with, like, more kids and more things going on. There's, like, I feel there's some ways you could explore there. The YouTube craze would be interesting too, though. And I could see,
I mean, they could also go overseas. Like, what if William franchised out across the pond. Like, you never know. Like, right. I don't know. I feel like their story, Mike and Abby's story, is, I don't know where else you could take it, but, you know, well, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially Mike. I don't see Mike, but yeah.
No, I can't. No. That character has to be done. Mm. And keep Vanessa in the coma. She's not necessary.
Sure.
But before we wrap up, I can give you guys some behind the scenes info and a little facts. So, to start with, you mentioned that you thought the movie did pretty well, and it did. They had a budget of $20 million, and it ended up making $295.8 million in the box office. So, They did pretty awesome. In January of 2024, it was announced that the Five Nights at Freddy's sequel is already in development. So, that helps. I still don't know where that's going to be. There have been reports that they plan on incorporating other game lore from other games and other animatronics from different games in future sequels. There's also talk of having movie original sequels. I mean, movie original animatronics in the sequels.
Okay.
So that could be fun.
Yeah.
That could be a little different. The writer and creator of Freddy Fazbear said that there were a lot of video game moments that he didn't feel fit in this first movie, but he wants to explore them in potential sequels. So we have that to look forward to. But then let's move on to some of critics' reactions. Five Nights at Freddy's currently has a 37% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, that's not too bad. That's also not something too good. Variety felt that the animatronic characters were underutilized, with the film instead of focusing on a baffling plot and backstory for their protagonist, which I agree with. I wanted to watch a Five Nights at Freddy's movie, not like in kind of hunting somebody down in the woods. And lastly, The Guardian gave the movie a 2 out of 5 rating, arguing that the low stakes late night thrill we expected from the material on the source material never arrived, held back by a mixture of indecisive restraint and misplaced self importance. But what about us? Do we cash or pass Five Nights at Freddy's?
I would say cash. Yeah, I mean, I think people should take a look, especially if they liked the games. It was definitely a fan service-y. You know, you had some from what you might enjoy from the games. So why not?
For me, since I'm not a huge fan of the movie, I mean, of the games, and I really had no connection. Judging this based off the movie and the plot, it's a pass for me. Because just me watching the movie, it felt disconnected from the stuff with Mike and the dreams and the custody dispute and then all the stuff at Fazbear. It never felt connected, and the ending with the drawings, it all just felt all sort of like it didn't thread together. Didn't thread together like I would have wanted to. So for me, it's a pass. But this was their first go at this was their first time. So you know, maybe the sequel will be better, and I'm looking forward to that. So
yeah, but I think I kind of expect the sequel. If the sequel's not better, yeah, I feel like it has to be. If it's not better, that's a pretty big
it has job. To be.
Now
the writers and the producers and everyone know what they can make a successful movie based off the IP. So now, like, you take that success and you give the fans something better.
Right.
Like, you already did the groundwork. Now just kill it. But with that, we have come to the end of this review. Thank you so much again, Deadeye, for coming back and reviewing another horror movie based off a video game. And, you know, there are a lot of those. So, you know, hopefully you can come back and join me again. I don't know what movie or video game that would be, but, you know, again, there's a lot out there.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm sure we could find something else sometime soon. Yeah, I really enjoyed this.
I'm a big fan of video games based off movies and TV shows, so just, like, flipping it around is new for me, so, you know. But hope you guys enjoyed this review. Good night.
If you like this episode, please check out the Haddonfield Horror Podcast from big series like Friday the 13th, Halloween, and Saw, or our one-off reviews like The Blackening and Hereditary. You can follow Haddonfield Horrors on Instagram and TikTok, where the host posts updates and mini-reviews. Full episodes are available on several podcasting platforms and YouTube. If you're listening to us on YouTube, please like and subscribe. The Haddonfield Horror Podcast is produced by Mark Smart,
Maria Perez,
Juan Griffin, and Elian Cordova. Themed by Lethal Injection and edited by Mark Smart.
The Haddonfield Horrors Podcast is a Letters 2 Media production.
Should we do an intro?